Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. It is early in the morning, just after 6 a.m. on December the 23rd, 2021. And why the 6 a.m. start today? Well, I am busy, but that aside, my guest today is Joe Howard, who is speaking with me from the northern part of Thailand, where I gather we are still on December 23rd, but what would you be, about 8 in the evening or something there?
It's 6 in the evening here.
Okay, so we've got about a 12 to 13 hour difference. All right, well, this is great, and as you might have guessed from the name Joe Howard, living in Thailand, Joe is one more of these people with U.S. citizenship living outside the United States. And let's begin with Joe. Maybe you can introduce yourself and what brought you to Thailand and what do you do in Thailand?
Well, Thailand, everyone was surprised when I decided to move to Thailand. I started studying the Thai culture in, I believe it was 2004. And then in 2006, I found a Thai temple close to where I live in Ohio. And then shortly after that, I met my future wife, who's from Thailand, at the temple. And then a couple years there, about maybe 10 years later or so, I moved to Thailand. And that was about 2018 I moved here.
Okay, so... Thailand is, I guess, pretty close to Ohio. Not really. So that's a, you know, a major change in your life. So what do you do in Thailand? You're employed in some way? Or?
Yes, I am an English second language teacher. I'm also a gym teacher and a health teacher at a Thai public school. As a foreign teacher, we have to teach more than one subject, which can be a bit annoying, and it's tough because of the amount of tests we have to create and time we have to put into teaching different courses at once. But it's a really nice experience, and it's different from any teaching experience you can get in the U.S. The pay is not that good, though.
I mean, oh, well, you know, the pay for most things in life is not all that good. So join the club there, Joe. But that's really interesting. Now, I understand that so English is sort of the number one, at least second language in the world, isn't it? Not first language, but am I right in saying that English is the number one second language in the world?
Yeah.
So hence a huge demand to learn it. Interesting. So now we were chatting sort of before starting this. Now you don't need, just for those who are interested in combining teaching and traveling, what you had told me was that you don't need any particular certification in teaching English as a second language to do this. Is that correct?
For the Thai public schools, you don't need like a TOEFL test or anything like that. You do need a degree in education. If you go to work as a teacher at a Thai public school, you can work there for 6 years without the degree, but you need to begin work on that degree, which I'm doing. And I have about a year left learning online for that degree.
So at the present time, you're working on a degree in education?
Yes.
And you're doing this while basically working full time. Now that's impressive. How are you achieving that? Where are you getting the degree in education?
The degree in education is online through the University of the People. It's pretty easy. It's laid back, but it can be time consuming. If you love writing and doing research, then University of the People is a pretty good university online.
So that's interesting. And that is, I infer from the name University of the People that part of the goal is to provide access to the people. So I would gather that that would be, at least relative in a relative sense, low cost.
Very low cost. And signing up is really simple. It was so easy for me that I struggled at first because being a college student in America, what I had to go through just to sign up for a college, it was hectic.
Okay. So you're taking the courses online, and I gather you're doing some exams online and all that kind of stuff?
For the master's degree, there are no exams. You have to do projects, and most of the projects involve group projects. So with the group projects, you work with other students from around the world. You have to interact with them, have meetings with them, find out who's doing what, who's leading the project. And that actually can be more difficult than just a test.
Oh, I would imagine that it is. Anytime you have to actually work and coordinate with other people is harder than a test. That's for sure. Completely different skills. And we'll get back to the working with people and organizing in just a second. But, you know, I'm so fascinated with this, you know, this notion of being able to achieve all this online. Could you share the website, University of the People? Do you have that at your fingertips if somebody were interested in that?
Yeah. You can go to that right now. It's really simple signing up. I didn't have any problems with it.
Okay. And you can take all, I mean, so you're doing education, and I gather there's all a whole range of subject areas that you can do with that.
University of the People, from what I understand, like for the master's program, they only have three programs, and one of them would be a master's in education. I believe they also have one in business.
Sorry, one in what?
Business.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they have a larger number of sort of undergraduate bachelor's types of programs.
Yes. For the undergraduate degrees, there's more to it. They actually do have tests. But for the master's program, it's all projects.
Wow, that sounds like a real opportunity. Well, that's so interesting. Okay, so then I gather that you sort of grew up in Ohio, and generally, were you educated in Ohio and all that?
Yes, I went to my first college was in Ohio. It was for my associate's degree. I went there for about 2-3 years. I started in 2006, graduated in 2008. Then my bachelor's was online in Indiana. And then my first master's was in Ohio.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of school. And you obviously got the online thing down, which is great. Okay. So you're sort of transplanted from Ohio to northern Thailand. And I would have to think that at least initially, that would have been a bit of a culture shock. Is that the case?
Just a little bit. I learned a lot about the Thai culture through the Thai temple I was a part of in Ohio. The Thais there are more open than the Thais in Thailand. So it was easy for me to learn about Thailand a bit more. The monks there, they were nice. They welcomed me with open arms. I was training to become a monk at one time, but then I had to stop to my college. I got really busy with college. I went to the temple every day, learning about the culture, the history, which the history of it can be kind of difficult to understand. The martial arts of Muay Thai, chanting, meditating. I did that every day. I would meditate for close to 2 hours. So I learned a lot about the Thai culture through the temple. And then when I moved to Thailand, I understood everyone here, the way they did things, but it was just a tad bit different because they weren't as open. So I kind of had to relearn things but it wasn't that difficult. Yeah, as a foreigner, I'll still run into an issue once in a while, but it's nothing big.
Sorry, as a foreigner?
As a foreigner living in Thailand, I'll still run into an issue once in a while, just because of the way the culture is here.
Foreigners all around the world run into issues. We are all a foreigner somewhere. And that's one of the things that these kinds of experience teaches us, I suppose. So, so you arrive in Thailand, you're a foreigner in Thailand, but now let's try to integrate the whole U.S. experience. I gather that you learned pretty quickly that you were also treated as a foreigner by the U.S. tax system. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. Yeah, that... I'm more open about this now than I was in the past. I have ADHD, attention deficit hyperactive disorder. I was diagnosed with it when I was, I believe, in first grade. And it's still with me as an adult. It's just, I have more coping factors now. But I still have a difficult time in life because of it. And understanding the tax system in the U.S. for me is difficult, more difficult than the average American.
I would not presume that for a minute. You're trying to understand it. Most of them are simply throwing up their hands, realizing they can't. So congratulations for making an effort.
So living abroad and understanding citizenship-based taxation, FAFSA and all that, it's harder for me than others, but I can see that a lot of people abroad, a lot of Americans abroad, they are pulling the hair on their head to kind of understand it. And even tax attorneys too.
Okay, you were breaking up. All right, so let's focus on first of all, when you went to Thailand, did you know anything about all these U.S. tax issues, or did this just sort of ambush you when you got off the plane? I mean, was there an IRS agent at the end of the tarmac saying, Joe, welcome to the new world?
I actually knew about it before I moved here. When I decided that I was going to move to Thailand, I don't know what happened. I don't know how I decided to go ahead and search taxes. I don't know what made me do that, but when I did that in the States, I found out about citizenship-based taxation and FAFSA, and I was surprised. And a lot of people don't know this, but I actually joined in the fight against CBT and FAFSA before I moved here. I was already on social media, but I was keeping a low profile.
You mean before moving to Thailand?
Yes. Yeah.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
And
I gather that you didn't like what you learned about citizenship taxation and FATCA.
Right. And there's a lot of things I don't like about the U.S., particularly the government, what they do to not just Americans abroad or homeland Americans, but what they do around the world.
Well, certainly the tax system is, this is, of course, my personal opinion. You can agree or disagree, but I think the whole tax system is sort of a 24/7 form of aggression against the rest of the world, trying to impose U.S. taxation on people who live in other countries. But okay, so you knew about it before arriving in Thailand, but I'm sort of interested in, is the experience of citizenship taxation in FATCA, when you actually have to live it, is it pretty much what you understood it would be, or is it better, or is it worse, or?
It's worse, and it seems like it's getting worse.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, this is fascinating, because I think you're the first person I've ever met who knew about this stuff before moving from the United States. I've only learned of you or met you recently, but you know, you say that you were in, you've been sort of involved in the discussion about this stuff before moving to Thailand. And, you know, so as it stands, you're not really, you know, you want to be a force for change here and contribute to the discussion. Is that putting it neutrally and accurately?
Yes.
Really hard for Americans, I think, whether they're in the, I think there's two kinds of Americans who have little representation and little access to, you know, any tax law reform or any law reform at all. The first group, I would say, are those who live outside the United States. And the second group, I would say, are those who live inside the United States. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the United States is definitely not a functioning democracy by any conceivable standard at this point.
I don't consider that democracy.
Yeah, if the definition of democracy includes some sort of representation, I mean, it seems to me that it's really just, I don't know if I should use the word deteriorated or evolved or progressed into an exercise where politics is just one political party fighting against the other for no reason other than the fight.
True. And even though they do fight each other, the only time they ever work together is when it involves hurting others for profit.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting way of putting it. I mean, you could get bipartisan support for, you know, launching a predator drone, you know, on the other side of the world, you know, or something like that. But, I mean, I think that you and I would agree that Americans abroad are particularly marginalized and disenfranchised when it comes to the political process.
True.
Okay. You know, as speaking personally, as sort of a veteran of working on this problem for many, many years, and having seen this from the point of view of trying to get laws changed, it is incredibly difficult to even get a meaningful conversation going because, well, for a lot of reasons, but one is that, you know, Americans abroad just have no representation, period. I mean, theoretically, they may have the right to vote sometimes, although I think that there's still states where they can't. Some of them may have the right to vote sometimes. But, you know, one of the fascinating things is that the right to vote is pretty meaningless unless you got somebody to vote for who represents your interests, right?
Right. And when I vote, there's no one on the ballot that I'm interested in. So usually I just write in the Rubber Ducky or Jesse Ventura or maybe something crazy like Donald Duck.
Well, Jesse Ventura is not crazy. I mean, that, you know, that's a serious, or at least he was a serious independent candidate.
I'm a big fan of Jesse. I really do like him, and you know, if he ran for president, I would vote for him in a heartbeat.
I was actually surprised that I've been surprised he has not run for president. I would have expected that. Well, you know, 2016 anyway, and I think I had some thoughts about that in 2012. But let's talk about. I noticed that now the first time that I met you sort of okay was in a discussion with a newly formed political party in America, which, you know, the concept of a newly formed party I think can only be a good thing. So, you know, what's interesting to me and for which, you know, obviously you should be commended is that you've sort of taken on as a mission the idea of finding a vehicle, a political vehicle, if you will, you know, for Americans abroad to be represented in the political process. And, you know, hats off to you. Well, I'm not wearing it. If I were wearing a hat, hats off to you, because that is not something that I have seen in the sort of general world of advocacy of Americans abroad. So can you talk to me a little bit about that? Would I be accurate if I were to say, so when I think of Joe Howard, you sort of abandon the idea that any relief can come through the main political parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, and that, or at least not very easily or quickly. And then the better thing to do is try to find or encourage some other form of expression for Americans abroad, perhaps in the form of a newer political party. Do I have that accurately?
Yes.
Okay, so tell me a bit about your initiatives in that regard. Alternative political parties, or maybe we should put it, creating an environment of democracy for Americans abroad.
Okay, well, so back in July of this year, I started learning a bit about the new third party called the People's Party, or Movement for a People's Party. And I checked out their platform, and their platform was interesting because it showed Medicare for all, single payer health care, $15 minimum wage, and some other things to that. Other countries here. And I thought, wow, this is the best platform I have ever seen in any political party. And the only thing I saw missing was residency-based taxation. Other countries have that. So that should be a part of the platform. So I decided to get involved and educate the members of the People's Party about that. And they were surprised about citizenship-based taxation. They didn't know that the U.S. followed that. And, from the meeting that you, me, Laura had with the members of the People's Party, which was a really good meeting, they even said that they weren't aware of citizenship-based taxation. They seemed interested in helping us. The issue I found, though, was that the national chair of the People's Party, he didn't really care. So to kind of shorten the conversation just a bit, I decided to look elsewhere. Some of the members of the People's Party in the lower levels, they still care about this, and they still want to do something. I am now working with the UPA. United People's Assembly, that consists of former members of the People's Party and current members of the People's Party who don't really like what's going on with the People's Party. And some of them do have power in the People's Party, and they're interested in putting RBT not just on the platform for the People's Party for, say, like the state of Washington, but they want to put it on the platform for the UPA, which is not yet a political party, but we are looking to morph it into a political party, maybe two political parties. With the UPA, I have a group in there called Americans Abroad Group, or the American Expat Caucus. It's not a caucus yet. I just need some Americans abroad to come on board, prove that they are an American abroad, show that they are a real person, that they are boxed out there, and that they're interested in helping. And they don't really have to do anything. I just prove who they are and that they're interested in their thing. And from there, we can get a caucus started through the UPA. And I would be the delegate. So I would be representing them in all these meetings through the UPA and in a little bit more. So this is something that I'm very passionate about. And Homeland Americans in the UPA are interested in Americans abroad coming on board. And I do.
This is really the result of your work, right? To be fair, I mean, you're the guy who got in touch with these people and said, hey, you know, like, this is a live issue. And, you know, Americans abroad need to be represented. That's basically you, isn't it?
Yes. I've even had some well-known Americans abroad, like with the American Expat Financial Journal, tell me that they've been seeing somewhat of a movement because of the information I've been getting out there. The People's Party is well aware of this because I was the one that contacted them. The same with the UPA. So a lot more people are noticing the issue because I've been contacting them, and I've been kind of hardcore on them. I bug them every day. And I stay up till 2 in the morning, maybe 3 in the morning, on work night. Just working on things, contacting people. And then I get about maybe 2-3 hours sleep, and then I'm off to work teaching 5 classes in a row. And
wow.
I'm doing gym, health, and English.
Sorry, gym, health, and what?
And English.
Wow.
And it's not the only thing I do, but on the side too, I'm a volunteer. I teach English on the side, and I also teach karate while I'm a student in college. And I'm used to my schedule being big because when I lived in America, I was an officer of Civil Air Patrol, which is part of the Air Force. I was a law enforcement officer and a member of the Red Cross, and I taught martial arts at the same time. So I'm used to juggling many jobs and volunteers.
So you sound like you're definitely a jack of all trades, which is great because, you know, for the years I've been involved in this, and I'm sure you would agree that this type of work requires a lot of versatility and requires a lot of skills. And it also requires the ability to, you know, to reach out and communicate with people as well. And I noticed that you are reaching out and trying to communicate. And that's one of the, you know, the reasons I wanted to, you know, I reached out to you to do this podcast to kind of help you get this message across, because, you know, this is not about furthering the interests of any political party so much as it is recognizing that some kind of a vehicle has to be established for Americans abroad to have any kind of representation at all in the political process. And that's really what you're pioneering here, I think, isn't it?
Yes. And this should involve one political party. All political parties should be involved in this. Because I will once in a while take part in a meeting with Democrats abroad, even though I see a lot of red flags from the meetings. I will still participate with Republicans overseas. The People's Party, I'll still participate with them through members of the UPA. But right now I'm looking at the UPA as a building block for Americans abroad, because it's not a political party just yet. We're still building it from the ground up. And if Americans abroad come on board with the UPA, they can be a part of its foundation, help build it up to help other Americans abroad.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't see why, you know, why or what anybody has anything to lose by not sort of getting involved in this. Because, you know, what I'm hearing from you, I don't really sense that you're a particularly political guy in a partisan sense at all. I mean, I think what I just heard you say is that you're willing to work with anybody who's willing to help fix the problems of Americans abroad, right?
Yes. And I used to be a Democrat. But then after I saw what was going on with the Democratic Party in 2016, I became an independent.
Well, it was Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan began his career as a Democrat too. And what did he say? Well, I never left the Democratic Party. They left me, or something like that. But I think it's very, very dangerous to identify with a party and not so much as, you know, as the issues. But this is really good, Joe, because this is not something that I've seen in the sort of world of Americans abroad over the years. I mean, I've seen a lot of, you know, let's get involved with Democrats abroad and, or this, that, and the other thing. But I've not seen initiatives to sort of plant the seed and grow some sort of a political process where Americans abroad can be represented. Okay. Now, practically speaking, Joe, how would somebody get in touch with you to join on? And I have the impression that joining on is not that big or onerous of a thing. It's just, hey, I want to be part of the movement to get Americans abroad some political representation, right?
Yes, it's simple. I mean, there's nothing to it. I would be the delegate doing the hard work. And if they want to actually participate and help me out, I would definitely appreciate that, because I would love to have a second delegate on board as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Now I'll put some sort of a way to contact you up in the description of this podcast. But for those who listen only or in auditory mode only, how would somebody contact you, Joe?
The best way to contact me would be through my email. I just created a brand new email for Americans Abroad. I have access to it all the time, so I click a button and I see it. I've had so many emails, and I just needed one just for Americans Abroad. So the best email would be my Americans Abroad email. That would be americans.expat.rbt@gmail.com.
All right, very descriptive. So american.expat.rbt@gmail.com is your point of contact. That's great.
Correct.
All right. Well, it's so early for me that I've got to get organized for the day. So this has been great. I really, really appreciate the passion that you bring to this, the work that you have done, and the vision that you have for finding a mechanism to gradually get some kind of political representation for Americans abroad. And to be clear, this is not a short-term thing. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And, you know, people are always, they're forever overestimating what they can do in 1 year and underestimating what they can do in 10, which is something I saw off a blog post that appeared a day or two ago. But I think it explains it rather well. So, you know, if you care about the long-term future of Americans abroad, no reason not to contact Joe, right?
Sure. Contact me anytime. I would love to bring on as many Americans abroad as possible. We need to unite. This issue, if it doesn't affect you right now while living abroad, it will affect you in the future, because the government, the U.S. government, they're making citizenship-based taxation much more powerful every day. They're adding more to it to victimize us. So we need to unite.
And I would say also that what's really clear to me, has been clear for years, is that all resident Americans need do to see their future is to see the way the U.S. government treats Americans abroad. You would presumably agree with that?
I agree. They even treat homeland Americans poorly too. And a lot of homeland Americans believe that if they leave the U.S., they'll be free. But the U.S. government will go after them no matter where they are in the world.
That's right. When it comes to the USA, you do not leave the land of the free for free, right?
Right.
All right. Well, this has been great. And I will try to get this podcast up today. I very much appreciate your taking the time from your obvious, overwhelmingly busy schedule to speak with me about this today. And we'll talk again down the road. Thank you.
Sounds great, John. Thank you very much.